Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fedge. Did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. All right, everybody, from Amman, Jordan, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, June the 16th, 2018, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late afternoon to early evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones. And, of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here in Amman has really been turned up a notch temperature-wise, with temperatures hitting a high of 95 degrees. And the temperature has barely retreated from that, with the current temperature of about 94 degrees at just after 5 p.m. locally. Winds have been a variable 4 to 9 miles per hour coming out of the west-northwest, and with such little wind, the air here feels quite warm, but also can be refreshing when the breeze decides to pick up a notch and say hello. Now, towards the end of the useful part of the evening, which is about 1 o'clock in the morning, we should be sitting at a high of about, 78 degrees. And that's going to be on the way down to 70 degrees in the hour before sunrise. Of course, tomorrow is Father's Day, and we are expecting temperatures to drop down quite a bit. Father's Day, of course, that great day to honor us fathers out there for everything that we've done over the years. And this is an occasion to express gratitude and all that wonderful fun stuff to your father and whatever you intend to do. Definitely get him out. Enjoy the day, because I'm going to get out and enjoy the day. You know what I'm going to do, guys? I'm going to actually go to an Iraqi restaurant. And there's a special type of fish place here in Amman. And it comes from Iraq, though. And Iraq has a special way of preparing a special type of Iraqi fish, something that's actually found mainly in the Euphrates and the Dijla River and some of these Euphrates, Tigris River, this type of thing. So I'm actually going to get out there and enjoy the fish. We are going to order, a couple kilos worth of it, and it will be freshly taken from a little pond there, and they cook it over a wood-type oven. The oven is fueled by wood, and it gets very hot, and essentially it's not barbecue. It's like a baked in an oven that is only fueled by wood, so it's really quite a delicious fish. You eat it with your hands. It can have a lot of bones in it. You got to be very, very careful how you eat it. But it's something I haven't done since I came back to Jordan, simply because it's been Ramadan. Now, Ramadan ended, Thursday night. So now the restaurants are going to be open. This particular restaurant, I actually tried to go on my birthday this past last week. And what happened was they only had the restaurant opened for the breaking of the fast, which they call iftar locally. So I was just, 30 minutes after iftar, I'm thinking, I don't want to fight the crowds because everyone's going to be there waiting. So I'll come a half hour late, and they said, we're sorry, we're already through for the night. Everything was being cleaned, so I'm going to go back tomorrow night, and I am going to enjoy a little bit of family cooking Iraqi style for my Father's Day. And I'll be honest, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be kind of fun. Join me in the chat room, everybody. I'm actually not there yet. Let me make my way over there now. And let's see here. Go to No, I want to keep that story open. Let me go here, Inside the Eye Live, InsideTheEyeLive.com. And what you want to do is click on the live chat button. Once you get there, or you can go to /live chat. That gets you in the door quickly. And it's loading now. And with the great internet here, with the new fiber I've brought in. Boy, this fiber's great. I kind of love the fiber. Generally, things load pretty fast. Pages are now open. I can see everybody here. Let me minimize you down, everybody. And you are officially minimized down so you don't take up my entire screen. There's One Eye and Jim Fire and Blackbird and Wolfsgang is about all I see there, Frontreal. But again, already starting to fill up. Looks like there's 11 people there. So join us. Now, we are, again, live streaming on YouTube. I'm not exactly sure what the I'm really not sure. I'm going to work on that this coming week. I see some people already there. Guys, get the word out. Just let people know we're live through your Twitter accounts, whatever, Facebook. Get some people in the door. But we are, again, streaming live on YouTube. And you can go to just do a live Inside the Eye Live search on YouTube is probably the best way to find the channel. But we are live. So, again, welcome to those who are already there in the chat room, et cetera, there. And kind of cool. You guys are starting to get it. We're going to be doing this as long as I'm in Amman, Jordan, everybody. We're going to be we are going to be also doing the YouTube channel here. Now, coming up in the second hour, we do have a pretty good show lined up for you. Mark Collett. Mark Collett is a co-host of a show called Inside or This Week in the Alt-Right. He's also a former BNP member, British National Party member. He was part of their communications team going back, I think, till 2010 when he got suspended. Of course, being suspended is becoming a big problem for us in the West, as a lot of our voices keep getting suspended out there. We have what else? That's about it as far as guests go this week. I've had a lot of people call me, send emails for trying to get on to the show. So we'll probably start to book some of these people again. And we still have a little bit of effort to do to make everything work right here. But so far, so good with the new streaming technology that we've employed. So thank goodness for that. Let's see. What else is news real quickly, locally? It's just hot, everybody. I've shut the doors. I've shut the windows because it's really noisy out there. So last week I heard a lot of background noise in the show as we were ending the show on the Inside the Eye Live show last week, and I was not happy with that, so we did shut that. So that's just some of the perils of broadcasting from some of these places that I do broadcast from. Everything is fine in that regard. What else? Not a whole lot. It's been very quiet, just very hot. Really, it's been very hot. You know, internationally here, there has been a big development here in the Middle East. It has to do with Yemen. This has been going on for quite some time, as we know, the war down in Yemen. Anyways, it's been going on since the Houthis seized the capital of Sana'a and kicked out the then political, I guess you could say, the elected leadership there. Of course, the Saudis took umbrage with that, and they launched a campaign that's been going on for 3 years now. What they've done is, just this week, we had a situation where there was an attempted landing at the port of Hodeidah. Hodeidah sits on the Red Sea on the western side of Yemen, which is the Red Sea. It's Yemen's main port, and it's been largely blockaded by the Saudis, but it is the main source for getting foodstuffs into the country. There was an attempt by the United Arab Emirates, which is responsible for this area of the war down there, and it was repelled by the government, by the rebel forces, the Houthi rebel forces. A lot of the agents, not the agents, but the governments locally view this as essentially an Iranian proxy war. Saudi Arabia does have a lot of missiles flying into it, so they're not obviously happy with that. So they are looking to bring this to a close, I know, as soon as possible. It's not a popular war inside of Saudi Arabia, but they do, as a nation, they view it as necessary. We don't have to agree with that, of course, but that's their business. Now, the United States government was asked this week to supply or provide some logistical help for the assault on the port of Hodeidah this week. According to some Pentagon spokespeople, and I think, I forget the name of the magazine, it's a U.S. Affiliated, though, a Pentagon magazine digital publication, it was stated that the United States refused to support the United Arab Emirates in their request. It was mainly for satellite imagery and a little bit of other intelligence type of resources. The United States Pentagon refused this. The Department of Defense refused. The assault went forward. Apparently, it was repelled. However, there's been an additional assault on Hodeidah's international airport. It's been a main source of humanitarian aid into the country. I know the Russians have used it a few times for sure to bring things in. The Iranians are not really allowed to fly in, but other countries, I believe, have used it. This airport has fallen today. It is now in the hands of the Saudi, really not Saudi, but the United Arab Emirates forces and their coalition. There is also a pincer move that is going up to try to block now the main highway from Sana'a to Hodeidah. And if that happens, you're going to have a situation very much like you have in Syria, where these rebel forces are now caught inside of pockets. And of course, as those pockets get squeezed, we are looking to see some of the fighting start to die down. Now, officials who are speaking on condition of anonymity here are saying that United Nations Special Envoy Martin Griffiths, he's now arrived in Sana'a in an effort to broker some type of a treaty. So it's developing quickly here. Now, obviously, if Hodeidah can be captured, that would be a strong development for the Saudi and the former Yemeni's government forces. Now, you can't buy into all of the propaganda you're hearing out there. There's a lot of nasty things going on with this war. Nobody's going to argue this point. But there's a lot of the region here, there's a lot of Yemenis who support what's going on inside of Yemen. Millions, in fact, millions upon millions of people inside of Yemen that support what's going on. So you got to be very careful how it goes. It's a nasty war. People are not happy about it. You can trust on that. But just be pragmatic here. There's a lot of things going on. And if you've ever been around certain types of gangs, if you've ever been in certain types of very high criminal areas of operation, like South Central Los Angeles, not everybody's nice. You can't deal business with everybody. And there are certainly elements within the Houthi areas where you have a very difficult time doing business with them. And that's something that I know a lot of listeners don't want to hear. You get a lot of the RT, press TV type of information, and I'm not knocking all of it for sure, but just know that there are other sides going on here that are not so pleasant when we start to look at what's the reality of what's going on in Yemen. It is a tragedy, to say the least, but essentially there is a lot of hypocrisy, obviously, with what's going on between Yemen and Syria. But let's just let these guys fight it out. Unfortunately, you have all the right in the world, by the way, to lobby your governments. And I don't have a problem with it, to block some of the military aid, to block some of what's going on down here. That keeps everybody honest for sure. But just know that things are not always as they are purported to be. Let's see. Where do I want to go really quickly? You know, I've been working on doing the video portion of the show. It's getting a little bit better. We've got most of the templates done now, which is going to allow me to be a little bit more efficient. You know, normally when I do the radio shows, I pop on the air. I'm not worried about how I look. Hello. I'm not worried about all that. You know, we're a radio show, but first and foremost, and we've been doing this a really, really long time. And obviously, radio does not rely upon the video portion of it whatsoever, but we are trying to now expand the franchise a little bit. We understand that a lot of you like to have a chance to see it on video. Quite frankly, the video for our flavor. We know what our numbers are on the radio side. We're not impressed, to be honest, with the video side of things right now, but we're going to give this a shot, give it a chance. We think we've got a good product, and we'll see how it works over the next month to 2 months out there when it comes to developing the video and how you guys respond to the video. There's an interesting story, you know, coming out. In fact, I think I kind of want to start with this, and it's really has to fall out from the Alison Chablot trial. You know, with Alison Chablot, Alison is one of these ladies who's a big friend of the show now. She's gotten, I know for a fact, I should not speak for her, and I don't mean to speak for her because I know she listens some oftentimes. But Alison is just one of these artists out there that found herself in a situation that I did back in the early 2000s, middle 2000s, being trolled by what essentially appeared to be, and in Alison's case, are pretty much verified to be, Israeli agents, people that would harass you, troll you, try to get you off the internet simply because you held anti-Jewish, anti-Israeli points of view. And this phenomena we've been witnessing for over 10, 12, 15 years now, it's a nasty phenomena. These people are idiots in the trolling Jewish world. That's just a reality. And what happens is that whenever you call the police, and I remember when I was being trolled by the Weave Arnheimers and some of these other people out there that were really harassing anybody that had an anti-Jewish position in the early 2000s, 2003, 4, 5, 6, and 7 to be exact. I remember just how nasty it was and how essentially I was always the one being trolled. I was the one being harassed, harangued, and then I would respond, and then nobody would ever deal with the taunts and the other actions that were going on that got me to respond. And when you look at a sporting event, if we were to put this in the realm of sports, you had officials who never saw the assault or the hit on the person who was hit, but they always would see the retaliation. And then the guy that retaliates would then get hit with the fine, would get hit with the penalty, would get hit with the flag, the whatever, you know, however you want to call it there. And that's what's happening in our legal field today, except for it's more sinister than that. In our case, it's not that the officials are missing the taunts, that are missing the harassment, that are missing the cyber stalking from these pro-Israel slash Jewish groups. The officials aren't missing a beat here. The Israelis, the Jewish people, they understand that they have power. They have control of some of these organizations. And what they have done is they have turned our legal system into a sham. They've created conditions on the ground that only one side is getting prosecuted here. There is no semblance of fairness. There's no semblance of honesty. There's no semblance of common sense. What it is that Herr Jew says something, and the next thing you know, the courts agree with them. And this is completely wrong, but for many reasons. One, it's infuriating. It creates a situation where we don't have fairness in our society. The rule of law no longer applies. It's what Jews say, and the rest of you be damned. And this, of course, is ultimately tyranny. In the case of Alison Chablot, if you're not familiar, she was sentenced Thursday. And of course, we went on the air Thursday, spoke a little bit about it. She appeared in a really good interview yesterday on the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show. I really recommend that you go listen to this. I did not know, for instance, that some 9 people a day are being charged and arrested for this Section 127 of the telecommunications law or whatever it is in the UK. 9 people a day, folks. This means that thousands of people are being rounded up by a Jewish-controlled criminal court system. And they're not being rounded up for doing anything illegal. They're being rounded up because they are saying things that Jews simply do not like. And how we can see this as beneficial to Jews in the long run, I'm not sure. But there is a layer of supremacy right now. And it's a nasty supremacy. It's a deviant supremacy that is going on within the Jewish culture or Jewish society right now that is very harmful. Because at the end of the day, Jews, by their own admission, are foreigners within all of these lands. They have their beliefs. Their beliefs are that they are exiled in all of these other lands. They are not part of our societies. They're not part of our culture. They believe, however, that they have a right to dominate over everybody's culture. One of those guys is Dershowitz, and I'm not sure when this was recorded, whether it was recently, but Dershowitz is one of these Jewish guys who's a Jewish supremacist, and listen to what he has to say, and then start to compare that to what we have to deal with when we are saying basically the same things as Alan Dershowitz is saying. Well, that's a very low level, isn't that there?
We have too much this, we have too much that. And we often apologetically deny our strength and our power. Don't do that. Don't do that. We have earned the right to influence public debate. We have earned the right to be heard. We have contributed disproportionately to the success of this country. Never, ever apologize for using our strength and our influence in the interest of peace. And peace will come for the Jewish people and the Jewish nation only through strength. Never apologize for using your strength for peace.
I'm not even sure that actually went through very well, folks. But basically what Dershowitz is saying is that, look, we Jews have come to dominate and we have earned our power to rule over everybody. We've earned the right to impose our will upon everybody. And don't apologize for that. Well, see, what we've been saying all along is that we're willing to recognize this Jewish power. We're willing to recognize that these people are not necessarily working on our own self-interest here as nation states. We are willing to recognize that in the interest of peace for Jews, which is basically war for the rest of us, they're willing to flood our countries with tens of millions of migrants from really areas that cannot benefit us as national peoples, and they don't blink an eye about it. They think all of this is just fine relative to what it is that they want to do. But folks, if they're going to take this stand, if they're going to take this layer of arrogance, what we should start to understand equally then is Jews must take responsibility for all the failures. And that is where Jews don't like or don't wish to actually get involved with that, I guess, that side of it. I'm trying to find out what's going on here. I can't see this. Yeah, so much stuff comes in my way. And quite frankly, guys, people are saying, please play the Alan Dershowitz thing again. I think I can do that. Let me try that again. I'm not sure why it did not go through. I'm going to try it again. It's actually kind of important that you hear it. And since we're doing radio, I guess I can do that. Let me try to play this again. I've changed directions of where the audio should go. So let's try this again.
People say Jews are too powerful. We're too strong. We're too rich. We control the media. We have too much this. We have too much that. And we often apologetically deny our strength and our power. Don't do that. Don't do that. We have earned the right to influence public debate. We have earned the right to be heard. We have contributed disproportionately to the success of this country. Never, ever apologize for using our strength and our influence in the interest of peace. And if peace will come for the Jewish people and the Jewish nation only through strength. Never apologize for using your strength for peace.
Again, that was Dershowitz again. I hope it came through a little bit clearer that time. But, you know, when we look at really what is happening out there in the world today relative to Jewish power, they recognized very clearly that they control our media. They know that. President Trump has, to his credit, stated very clearly. Wow, we're going into a break already. Anyways, folks, it's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this.
Night of our lives, but you're gonna let it be the worst.
And I guarantee a week won't go by in your life you won't regret walking out, letting them get the best of you.
Well, I'm not going home.
We've got too far,
and I'm gonna stay right here and fight for this lost cause.
A day may come when the courage of men fails,
but it is not this day.
The line must be drawn here, this far, no farther.
I'm not saying it's gonna be easy.
You're going to work harder than you ever worked before.
But that's fine. We'll just get tougher with it.
If a person grits his teeth and shows real determination...
Failure is not an option.
That's how winning is done.
Believe me when I say...
We can break this army here.
And win just one for the Gipper.
But I say to you, what every warrior has known since the beginning of time...
You've got to get mad.
I mean plum mad dog mean.
If you would be free men... You must
fight to fulfill that promise. Let us
cut out their living guts
1 inch at a time.
And they will know what we can do.
Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
You're like a big bear, man.
This is your time.
Seize the day.
Never surrender.
Victory or death.
That's the Chicago.
Who's with me?
Clap! Clap!
Don't let
him die! Clap!
All right, let's fly!
And gentlemen in England, now abed, shall know
my name is the Lord!
What I tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
our Independence Day!
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. One world coming together to bring freedom home. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Thank you.
And welcome back, everybody. It's the Fatch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware for Saturday, June the 16th, 2018 it is. You know, Father's Day is like the third Sunday traditionally of every June, I think it is. And one, two, three. Yeah, tomorrow's the third Sunday already. Wow, time is just flying by, everybody. Don't forget, take care of your dads, everybody. That's just a great thing to do. It's, again, hot here in Amman. We're looking at 93, 94 degrees, 95 degrees. I think we're still sitting around 93. I'm surrounded by the studio lights here, so it's a lot hotter inside here. But I have, for your listening pleasure, shut all my windows, and it's really a lot nicer because of that. Everybody's saying it sounds good. So, again, guys, let me know again. Nice fade out. Okay, great. So then you heard it perfectly. That's a really good thing. I forgot to turn it off, though, when I went back. And okay, very good. So basically, guys, let me just do something really quick here while I do some minor production work. It's listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And, of course, without you, we don't have a platform, and we are still trying to grow additional efforts out there. But, folks, right now, this is our big thing. We are doing well here on Revolution.Radio, and we really ask that you support Revolution.Radio and keep it in your thoughts when it comes time to donating money. You know what? And I'll send you an email. I did notice, but I got another donation coming in this week. That's great. All of our bills come due in the next 30 to 60 days. So we do run a tight ship. We've obviously invested a lot in making the product as high quality as possible. But the bills, the operational bills for the most part, are going to come due. The big bulk of it is going to come due early next month, late next month, and then into September. Basically, over the next 30 to 60, 90 days, all of the bills really come due, except for some nominal stuff. So we are always looking to raise money equally. But right now, I can say thank you to everybody who has donated and helped keep the show up alive and running. And without a hassle, it's not costing us money to come to visit you every Saturday. So we appreciate that for sure. This is the time where we do like to do the Cat Report. The Cat Report is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. And we got some actually good news about the Cat Report. I just saw something I hadn't seen for a couple of days. But basically, the Cat Report is also brought to you by Blackbird9TradingPost.org. That's Blackbird9TradingPost.org, which, of course, is where you can find Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird 9. He is an NSA whistleblower, former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. I do that all off the top of my head after all these years, and you think I would just do it smoothly, but no, it doesn't work that way on radio sometimes. Our brains get fried. But nonetheless, the Cat Report is pretty cool. I just saw one eye running across the street there, and I just saw him come down this flight of stairs, so I think he's coming home right now. I haven't seen him for about a day and a half. He came home yesterday early in the morning. He had something to eat, and he took off. And I just saw him literally running across the field, across the way, and came down. So I think one eye's on the way home, everybody. But the thing is that everything's locked. The front door is locked, so he's going to have to maybe sit outside for a while unless people hear him screaming at the door, because I don't want you to have to hear all the street noise out there. Bruiser's just been a lot of fun. Bruiser's a cool cat. He's sitting upstairs outside right now in the kitchen. In his favorite perch, which is a window. It's like an awning. Not really an awning. It's an iron gate thing that kind of hangs out. And we put pillows there so he can sleep there. And he just kind of sleeps on the pillows. And I'll be honest, at nighttime, it's a fantastic place to be. Lots of fresh air and, fresh cool air, I should say. Add the cool in. And he just loves to camp out there. Sometimes they'll both be there. But I have not seen, quite frankly, one eye for about a day and a half. Pretty sure that was him. There's like three cats out here that have this white look to them. But I know One Eye, he likes that area up over there. So hopefully that's One Eye, and I'll get to see him after the show now, because it's kind of hard to do that while we're doing the show. But that's kind of the cat report. There's not a whole lot going on except for One Eye's just out gallivanting around. So we haven't seen a whole lot of One Eye the last week, to be truthful. He just kind of comes in, he eats, and he takes off. And that's One Eye. He's like, see you. I got things to do, man. So he comes in. He was so cute the other day, by the way. We had some dinner, of course. Got to eat dinner. But there, honestly, it was called Bomi or something like that. And what it is, it's a Iraqi-style okra dish. And the okra just happened to be exceptionally fresh. It was really delicious. They did a good job here making it, but there's nothing in there for the cats. Nothing at all. And One Eye just plopped up at the table, and he put both of his paws on the table, and he was just looking back and forth to all the people eating. I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. There's no food for you here. There's just nothing on here. But Bruiser last night, we went out to a barbecue last night, and we had some barbecue, some fish, and some kebab, mainly kebab and some squid. The squid and the kebab got finished. The fish did not, so when I got home, we kind of ate that as leftovers for our evening meal towards 9 o'clock. And One Eye never came, but Bruiser, he had a great time. So he was just there. And what's funny about Bruiser is you can put the food down, because as you guys know, Bruiser's blind. I'm not sure why we keep doing closing that. But Bruiser is kind of blind. And so what happens is he just kind of like seems like it's auto doing that. But he just can't see at all. He can see a little bit of light shadow. So if you like come at him and he sees the shadow coming over him, he does react. So he can see some type of light through his eyes, but he can't see. And so you got to put the food on the floor for him, and you just have to like tap the floor where the food is. And then his nose kind of picks it up, and he enjoys whatever it is you're sharing with them. But that is the cat report, everybody. Again, it's proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small, and by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club. Again, it's a radio show hosted by Blackbird Nine, also known as Frederick C. Blackburn. And you can catch his show again every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Spreaker Radio Network. And we definitely urge you to check that out, because he's got a lot of unique esoteric information that goes even beyond what I would do. So he does a great job. He's put together a very good franchise over there, as has our other sponsor, who's done quite a remarkable job with his franchise, and that is the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock show. And
Oy vey. Oy gewalt. It's like another shower.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
Hollywood is run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Hey. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on boyum tears. Hey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
Oy vey.
The Oy Vey Moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Barnes Review at barnesreview.org. Order your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live Now link, or visit AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media. All right, everybody. And again, you want to check out Andrew Carrington Hitchcock's show yesterday, quite frankly. I listened to it. I got an advanced copy of it from Andy. He sent it privately to me. And I'll tell you what, it was with Alison Chablot, and What Allison had to say was very enlightening. It was a very good conversation, to say the least. Andy does the show with Paul English, another great radio voice, quite frankly, who does a lot of work with the Eurofolk radio team over there. And so, Paul, if you're listening, we want to get you on the show equally. But again, why it's doing that, folks, I don't know. It just seems to want to bounce back on its own. I'm not actually moving it over to the intro, to that bumper side, everybody, if you're watching the video. But again, we are live streaming on YouTube. Get the word out. Get as many people can. I'm doing the show, folks. I can't do it right now. So if you can help get the word out, let's get this thing spread out there, see if we can build this platform equally until the Jews decide to cut me off, although I don't think they're going to. Mark is actually standing by. I'm just going to chat to him real quick. Okay, so anyways, we're going to try to have him on. We'll actually put the video on with Mark Collett, so that should be good. Now, basically, going back to the Oy Vey moment and the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock show it was a very good conversation. If you didn't hear it, go to andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com and give it a listen, because quite frankly, it was very fascinating. I found it exceptionally good. But this week's Oy Vey moment is coming to us from Italy. And of course, the Italians, as you know, they've put up this no more landing of human trafficking ships coming in, these NGOs that are trafficking of human beings and making handsome money doing it, by the way, into Italy. But now the Jewish angle here is that Italian soccer has a problem, and it's making headlines, all, of course, for the wrong reasons. And one of these things is, rather than, it says here, celebrating the achievements of Gianluigi Buffon or Giorgio Chiellini, Italian soccer is once again struggling to come to terms with a decades-old anti-Semitism problem, and the likely focus of its resurgence is Anne Frank. Now, when you look at what's going on out here, Anne Frank, everybody.
Jews are too.
See, how is that doing that, folks?
We're too rich.
How is that just kind of close?
We have too much this, we have too much that.
How is it actually doing that? It's actually like doing this on its own. I'm not even touching the mouse, and it's just starting up all these pages. That's annoying. Maybe my computer's haunted, or it's under control of a Mossad agent. Who knows? Who knows, quite frankly, because I am actually not doing anything. Let's see. But basically, they're talking about... Jeez. Hold on, folks. I wish Mark would have done this before I went live so that we could have had all these details worked out. So basically, yeah, sometimes, you know, you like... Okay, so basically what's happening is that you're talking about this long-term anti-Semitism problem, and it's this resurgence of Anne Frank. Now, here's the thing. Anne Frank has... Okay, Anne Frank is somebody that is, the whole book has been shown to be a fraud. Literally, like most things in the Holocaust narrative, in the Holocaust industry, now that the 60, 70 years have gone by, we've understood as a people that we've been lied to, that the stories such as Anne Frank, such as Misha the Wolf, such as the automatic skull grinding machines, so many different stories have come out, and there's people have done whole research on this, I feel upset. I'll tell you what. You know, when we asked the guests to come on, we actually asked them to prepare before we're going live with the shows. So it would be a lot easier that way, folks. Sometimes it's frustrating, but we want to bring these guests on anyways. Nonetheless, guys, the stories out there have changed a lot over the years as far as the honesty. And a lot of Jews have had to retract their stories. They've had to give money back in some case. They have used their stories to walk into childhood, elementary schools, high schools, etc. And the reality is, folks, is that, look, Jews are lying to us. They have for probably 70 years now. I do know that there were standing orders out there from the U.S. military, and I cannot find them anymore. And that is that, look, if you spread lies about gas chambers, you would be shot, something to that effect. And that's going back right after World War II. So we know historically the Holocaust, as it's been sold, is a fraud. And when you take a case like Alison Chablot, and she sings a song about the fraudsters, literally, the fraudsters, well, why should she be prosecuted by Jews for this? And then they complain about the rising anti-Semitism, and yet here they are saying that they dominate, they control, as Dershowitz, and they decide really how public opinion is going to go. And then when they want to claim anti-Semitism as a way to tyrannize intellectually people, how is this going to be settling well with the natives over time? Now, one of Italy's most successful teams is called Lazio. And all we hear from the Jewish community is how they are a racist team, essentially. Their Anne Frank stickers now are popping up everywhere. And people are complaining in the Jewish community about this anti-Semitism of Italian soccer. But how about the anti-Goy mentality of Jews who pushed the story to begin with? Again, we must continue to push back against Jewish power. They're complaining now, meaning the Jewish community is complaining that they're using the symbol or the sign of Anne Frank or the image of Anne Frank as part of this campaign out there to raise awareness of Jewish corruption. Now, the president of Rome's 20,000 strong, that's not strong, folks. It's 20,000 measly morons in a culture that has millions upon millions of people in the city. Why should the Italians, seriously, why should the Italians care about these 20,000 whining, pathetic little losers who are complaining about something that's an historical fraud to begin with? Again, it's exceedingly offensive and it's aggressive by the Jewish community to think that being at 20,000 strong, that they should have a say in Italian politics. If they have any say at all, it should be based on a representative democratic basis, not on the fact that they have power, not on the fact that they control the media, not on the fact that they control the governments. Because, look, if they control the governments, now they are extending themselves beyond their representative sampling inside the population. And this is simply this is not acceptable over a long haul, because as we see, they have nothing but ill will towards the Italian people. They say here 5 years now this has been going on, and they're saying that defending this campaign of Anne Frank, you might call it fascist, but it's not racist. Well, quite frankly, I don't see why people should care. I honestly don't see why they should care. Anne Frank is a fraud, plain and simple. She didn't die as part of some massive extermination campaign by Germans. It didn't happen. She, like many Japanese, like many Germans in America, was rounded up, put into camps because they were seen as a hostile enemy, not an occupation, but a hostile enemy population, just as they did to the Japanese. And she died of typhus. She wasn't killed. She died of a disease, partially because her brethren that controlled essentially the U.S. military and the British military, they were bombing all the supply lines so the Germans could do nothing to even help her. So why should we be whining about, or why should we be bothered, quite frankly, with the way that Jews are whining about Anne Frank in this story? What we're seeing is they're using that to bring tyranny to the rest of us. They're talking about, this is the language Jews are using here. They say, using her image as a sign of insult and threat is, besides being inhumane, alarming for our country, which 80 years ago was infected with the cruelty of anti-Semitism. Well, the fact that Jews use the word infected tells us that Jews have ill will towards the people. The idea that somehow anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish or counter-Jewish phenomena happens in our societies without having some type of rational spotlight put on Jewish behavior is simply absurd, folks. Nothing ever happens in a vacuum. You don't sit there and walk down the street and say, you know what, today I'm going to hate Jews. Nobody does that. Unless, actually, it won't even happen. Look, we all are human beings at the end of the day. We have a brain. We have to be programmed. Brain is what? An anagram for B-I-N-A-R. Binar, binary, the computer. It is a computer. Without that brain being programmed, you're not going to have any of these feelings typically. You need some impetus to create the programming. Jews, they hate everybody. Why? Because they are programmed by their Torah. We are the superior people. You've got politicians nowadays in Israel. They're sitting there bragging openly about how they are. Quite frankly, they are the superior people of planet Earth. Literally. Their whole Talmudic Noahide system is all about how we are the superior people of this planet. Here they are whining to us. Literally, time and time again, about the cruelty of the Israeli Defense Forces and why we are against this, and how the Israeli Defense Force is just shooting kids at will, literally because it's fun for the day. Hey, let's go pick off a few Palestinians today. And they'll get out there on their berm, hide behind the berms with their rifles, and then they just shoot the kids, and then they give themselves a high five, and they go back and they have a beer. That's Jewish culture. And then they want to complain to us about this culture. Well, why are you Jews complaining to begin with? If you think it's okay to just shoot people because of who and what they are, what precedent are you Jews telling the rest of us? Because we have always been a nation and a people who have been opposed by this idea called tyranny. You did not goad the American people.
Why did it do that? We control the media.
Yeah. I didn't even start that. Why did it even do that? I should almost play it again. Play it again, Sam. But yeah, the point here being is that, folks, these guys, they want to set it up as a precedent that it's okay to shoot people just at will. That's the lesson coming from the Jewish community right now. And they're saying if you oppose our philosophy, if you oppose our beliefs, then you're an anti-Semite. Well, okay, shouldn't we all be anti-Semites if that's what they're saying? Then you have things like The Guardian in the UK saying we need laws now. We need laws that define anti-Semitism so we can fight it. Well, first of all, we is a super hyper minority that already has power, that has control. And then they want to fight what? The fact that they're the ones running the whole system and people aren't supposed to have a say in how everything is being run? See, that's the whole gambit here. Using the anti-Semitic canard to avoid having to deal with the fact that people are just pissed off with Jewish behavior. And it's much more sinister and much more sick than what we have mentioned here. And perhaps we'll get to that in hour number three here with some of the stuff that's been coming out, even on the BBC with, I forget the guy's name. We'll get it a little bit later. But folks, it's a serious, serious problem going on out there, to say the least. It's a serious problem. It's an issue that all of us are going to have to deal with. We see tyranny. We see free speech being taken to tasks now in the UK. If Allison is right and we have nine Section 127 laws being arrested right now inside of the UK, we're talking about the roundup of thousands, literally thousands of political dissidents. And Jews want to whine about Anne Frank and the use of Anne Frank to prove and show that they are a fraud. It's The Fetch, everybody. Mark Collett is coming up next. He'll be from the UK. And back with more right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch Inside the Eye live prime time coming to you from Amman, Jordan. Again, we'd like to just let you know that it's hot here. But we've got everything moving. We are now live streaming on YouTube. That's really just our second week doing this now. We're trying to get all the bugs out of it. We do have now our first guest here that's coming live. He is Mark Collett. He is the author of The Fall of Western Man. He's also a former BNP party member. He's got a very popular show also called This Week Inside. I think it's called This Week Inside the Alt-Right. I've seen a couple of it. Actually pretty good shows, Mark. And I think he is now standing by. Mark, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hello, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, very good. Okay, I see you popped up there. Yeah, you're there. I can probably try to fix this a little over the break. First time I've done this, Mark, live, so welcome to Inside the Eye Live, man. I've been watching a little bit of your work out there on Twitter. That's how I got to know you a little bit. You've got your article called The Fall of Western Man, but you're very keenly advocating for free speech in the UK, an issue that we have been taking a big lead on equally. And you're very familiar, I know, with the Tommy Robinson story and the Alison Chablot story. But let's take us back a little bit for those of us who really don't know you that well. You were, I guess, a member of the BNP, the British National Party, was it, back 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah, I joined the British National Party back in the year 2000 when I was at university. I was 20 years of age at the time, and I spent 10 years with the BNP from 2000 to 2010. I was their youth leader, and then I moved on to being their head of publicity, and I was in charge of all of their graphic design and graphic output, and I produced the material that was their election addresses and other publicity material for their most successful election runs, which were the European elections, where they got two MEPs elected, and their run for the GLA, where they got a member of the GLA elected, as well as numerous successful council elections as well. So after that, I left the BNP, and I've been, obviously, notably at the moment, I've written a book and I've been doing very much my own thing, but I've also been assisting many groups who are either patriotic or who are pushing a free speech or sort of pro-European agenda.
And then why were you kicked out of the BNP?
Well, when I left the BNP in 2010, it was, I've actually got the paperwork. There was a lot of disagreements at the time in the party about the way it was being run. There was a lot of disagreements about certain financial issues that were going on within the party at the time. And unfortunately, myself and several other people were ushered out over that. And afterwards, sadly, the party collapsed. And in 2015, they lost their MEPs. They previously lost most of their council. I think this year they lost their final council seat, which is very sad, actually, because the amount of effort that went into winning those seats, the amount of effort that went into actually achieving such electoral milestones was huge. But in the wake of that, we have seen some good things come about. Obviously, UKIP brought about the Brexit referendum, which was successful. So it hasn't all been doom and gloom on the British political scene.
Now, according to, I guess, Wikipedia, which we all take with a grain of salt for reasons you could probably identify with, you were claimed to have made probably some accurate statements. I've seen accurate statements about what's been going on with the immigration problem inside of the UK and obviously elsewhere in the West. But did they kind of try to flag you and try to railroad you in certain ways, stigmatize you, I guess, for some of the statements you had made regarding the immigration problem in the UK?
Well, in 2004, both myself and the then leader of the British National Party, Nick Griffin, were arrested for incitement to racial hatred. I was charged with 8 counts and Nick was charged with 4. And those charges related to speeches both myself and Nick made in the run-up to the 2004 European elections. And quite crucially, those speeches were made in areas where there was huge problems with child grooming gangs, obviously Muslim males preying upon white females in small towns in Yorkshire. And we were the ones that started speaking about that initially. We were the ones that broke the story. And for doing that and for campaigning in those areas, we were basically pulled upon these trumped up charges. And it took until 2006 for all the charges to be finally defeated. We were found unanimously not guilty on all charges, both myself and Nick, and we walked free from court. And the important thing about this was all the speeches we made were made at private political meetings. And it was a landmark ruling because it essentially gave British people the right to speak their mind at such meetings and to say what they wanted in private, as long as they weren't inciting violence and as long as they weren't saying anything slanderous or libelous, they could speak their mind in private, which was something that was very important, because the way British law works is it constantly evolves, and if new precedents are set, they get written into law. So by winning that case, it was a huge landmark, not just for us, not just for the British National Party, which went on to much greater success in the wake of those court victories, but it was also a landmark hearing for the British people and secured to a large degree legal freedoms for them.
Mm. Now, what's the relationship then with if you, because we're America, I'm from America, so we're trying to keep up with what you guys are doing over there because we're kind of kindred spirits in a way with the free speech issues. What's then with your story and what's going on with the Tommy Robinson? Because here we hear the Tommy Robinson is the big breaker of the grooming gangs and all of this. And now you're saying here that you're really one of those key people that broke that. So what's the parallels, I guess, between what you did and what the Tommy Robinson has been doing?
Well, Tommy Robinson, he was the founder of the EDL, and since he founded the EDL, Tommy Robinson has been the most vocal and well-known anti-grooming or anti-Islamic extremist activist in the UK, and I can't take any of that away from him, but he was notably talking about scandals that took place far, far sort of, well, they're more recent scandals, sort of the Rotherham scandal, what happened in Telford. He's been talking about issues such as that, whereas we were talking about things that were happening in Keighley. We were talking about this as far back as 2004. So that was long before Tommy Robinson came on the scene. But that's not to take anything away from Tommy Robinson. He's done sterling work and he's done an awful lot to raise these issues to the eye level of the public. The public have got a huge amount from what he's done. And at the moment, obviously, he is in jail for speaking about these issues of Islamic grooming.
Many people, we've had many guests on the show that have referred to these stories. One of those is Lady Michelle Renouf has been on the show many times speaking about this. And we've always complained, and maybe it's just the politics of the UK because we're not British citizens, is that nobody's talking about who's behind all of this. We heard about Geert Wilders, and Geert Wilders is, of course, just come out and spoken out about how we need to have all of these things about Muslims and Muhammad, and it's not us doing the cartoons that's the problem. It's being killed because we did it. Yet we're looking at situations in the UK where you guys can't say a single word against organized political power of Jewish people there without finding yourself hauled into the dock. So where is the effort? I see you making the effort, quite frankly, but where is the effort of some of these political people to start to say, hey, the problem isn't so much our Muslim problem, that's a problem, of course, but it's also with organized Jewish power in the country.
Well, you raise a very, very important point there. Now, firstly, I don't see Tommy Robinson really as a truth seeker. He is somebody who is essentially an anti-Islamic activist, but he doesn't go beyond that. He is someone who is very much a gateway for people into the movement. He talks about things that are much more on the surface, much more in the public eye, that the press often talk about, and he is very popular for doing that. But he doesn't mention things such as the Zionist influence. He doesn't mention Jewish power or the way that Jewish power often manifests itself in a pro-immigration stance. And because of that, some people don't like him. But I think we have to take the positives from what he does. He has a huge reach and he does wake a lot of people up to pressing issues. But he doesn't talk about how these issues came about. He doesn't talk about the engineered demise of the European people. He doesn't talk about white genocide. And he is very, very pro-Israel, obviously. So whilst I'll agree with him on some things, I like to dig a little deeper. I like to look a bit deeper into who is doing this, who are pulling the strings, who are the people behind the curtains. I like to analyze that, and I like to make YouTube videos about it. I like to talk about it on radio shows. I appear with Dr. David Duke every Friday. But that just isn't something that Tommy Robinson's going to do. But that doesn't mean he isn't an ally to a certain degree, and that he doesn't do a certain amount of good work in red-pilling people and starting people on their political journey. Because what we all have to remember is that when people go on a political journey, they often start off with things that are quite soft, quite entry-level, and they advance, and they get a thirst for knowledge. And the more they thirst for knowledge, the closer they get to the truth eventually. And there are different levels of that. And the level that Tommy's on and the things he speaks about, they're very entry level. They're very mass market. They're very populist. But that's why other people exist, to help people further along their political journey, to take them that step further and to give them the red pills that take them closer to the eventual truth that they seek.
It's actually something that we would support you on. I actually agree with that. If we don't make use of the energy Tommy's given us, we're missing a huge opportunity here. And one of those big opportunities is to raise the awareness of free speech inside of the UK. Of course, the Magna Carta enshrined free speech, and it was enshrined obviously because somebody was trying to suppress it. That's why they had to enshrine it. And now it looks like we are almost coming back to where we need a new Magna Carta. What's the street like right now in the UK as more of these cases come down for really suppression of free speech in the UK?
Well, this is something that frustrates me quite a lot, to be honest. And it's one of the frustrations I have actually with Tommy Robinson and with certain of his followers, not the people on the ground level, because they might not know about this, but the organizers, the people who are calling themselves free speech activists. And there is a huge double standard from those people. On one hand, they will hold days like the recent day they held, the Day for Freedom. That was before Tommy was put in jail. And they were talking about free speech. They had people there like Sargon of Akkad. They had people there like Count Dankula. They had Lauren Southern speaking from a video link because she's banned from entering the UK. Now, all of that is well and good, and I'm not knocking them for effort. But I do see a huge double standard when they don't mention the likes of Ursula Haverbeck, an 89-year-old woman who has been incarcerated in Germany for speaking her mind. They don't mention Monica Schaefer, another lady who is of, I believe she's Canadian, and she traveled to Germany and was imprisoned in Germany for something she said in Canada. They don't mention Alison Chablot. Now, Alison, thankfully, is not serving a jail sentence. She was sentenced to 20 weeks, but that sentence has been suspended for 2 years. So she has that hanging over her head for 2 years, but she won't actually serve any time in jail, which is good. You know, I don't want to see good people spend time in jail, but equally, I don't want to see good people spend 2 years of their life with the sword of Damocles hanging over their head. They didn't mention Paul Golding and Jada Franson. Now, Paul Golding's been released from prison. Jada Franson hasn't. They didn't mention Jeremy Bedford Turner, another patriot who has been jailed for making speeches about Zionist power. And I find it very, very frustrating that these people are banging the drum about free speech, but they are very, very selective in who they want to give that free speech to, who they extend those freedoms to. And I find it frustrating because free speech isn't just for Tommy Robinson. It's not just for people who align with him politically and he'll have on his stage. That's not what free speech is about. Free speech is for things that you don't like, for opinions that you don't like, for things that are unpopular. They are for everyone. Free speech is for everyone, but he doesn't extend it to everyone because, unfortunately, many of these people who stood on that stage with Tommy Robinson are all too quick to suck up to any Zionists in the media. They try to get on TV. They want lucrative book deals. And because of that, they won't go any further speaking the truth, which is up to them. What they say is up to them. But they won't defend the rights of others who do speak about those things. And that's awfully hypocritical because the people who are organizers, people in the know, people who are content makers, who are talking about Tommy Robinson and acting as if it's the greatest crime known to the British people or to the English people for Tommy to be jailed. But those people aren't saying anything about an 89-year-old woman who's been dragged off to jail and could spend the last 2 years of her life in some almost Soviet-style gulag for speaking her mind. If people aren't talking about that, that to me is very wrong.
Yeah, I know we've had Monica on the show here. We've had others on the show that you mentioned there. We've had Alfred Schaefer's Alfred Schaefer's sister of Monica or brother of Monica Schaefer. 321 area code. Hi, you're on the line with Mark Collard.
You know, it really makes my blood boil to hear this guy talk about free speech. Him being on the David Duke show every week, who has no free speech, has never had free speech. He can't be questioned a single word. And this guy's talking about free speech? Tell me what venue you have for free speech. And tell me how you can justify backing a Zionist tool like Tommy Robinson and Pamela Geller, and then saying that you're on our side, you're doing the work for us.
Okay, all right.
I'm telling you, it's baloney.
Okay, we'll let you. He calls in from time to time about that. He's not a big fan of David Duke. I think he misses what you're saying, Mark, is that we're not agreeing with everything Tommy does or David Duke does, but these people have huge audiences.
David Duke's a very good friend of mine. I work closely with David Duke. I can't see why someone who is opposed to Zionist power or the disproportionate role that Jews play in the Western media or the banking system or the role they play in anti-Western activities. I can't see how anyone who would be concerned about that would be against David Duke. David Duke spent his entire life essentially talking about those issues, writing books about those issues, and spreading the word about it. To me, David Duke is one of the most tireless, hard-working people in this movement.
It's live radio, Mark, so you know you got to take the good with the bad, you know?
No, and the other thing is, with Pamela Geller, with Tommy Robinson, I've already said I don't agree 100% with what they say, but I do have to back their right to free speech, because I do believe that is a fundamentally good thing. Free speech isn't just for the people you agree with, it's for people you don't agree with. And whether people like everything that Tommy and Pamela do is irrelevant. They still do more good than bad in waking people up. I mean, these protests...
And Mark, isn't that the key here, is that we need to focus on what is benefiting raising awareness and not try to push it down? There's no point. We must. I mean, Tommy Robinson, I personally don't like him simply because, and that's my choice, he doesn't talk about the Jewish issues at all. He's not helping us. He's not using his reach to really help us. We have to still take the hard part and move it forward. Mark, you seem to be a popular guy. We have another call coming in. 704 area code. Hi, you're on the line with Mark Collett.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Dennis Vincio. And I am a fan of Mark Collett, unlike apparently the last caller. But I do agree with that caller in some respect, because the thing I have an issue with, I could kind of agree with you, Mr. Collett, about free speech and everything, but none of these people would Tommy Robinson, these types, these Zionist types, they would all throw our free speech rights under the bus. So, you know, I just act in kind. As a rule, I'm for free speech, and I think free speech works in our favor, because if everyone actually did have free speech, that would work in our favor, because we have the truth and the facts on our side, whereas they do not. So that would be to our benefit to be for free speech for everyone. Free speech in general, but these people are not for our free speech. I mean, I think Tommy Robinson has been very vocal that he would just as soon see all of us thrown under the bus. So I just wanted to throw my two cents
okay.
in. But
Frank, thanks
I'll
for the
go back to listen.
Thanks. Thanks for the call, Frank. Mark, I think you got a point there, don't we? That Tommy Robinson, he's been very critical of like the Unite the Right rally. He talked about how he would be stomping on the Nazis in Charlottesville, and that there is some legitimate anger with some of these personalities with the way that they are approaching these issues. They're not just not providing platforms, but they're actually being harmful to people that normally should be considered allies to people like a Tommy, which makes him sound like he's really not an ally. So how do you deal with this type of dissonance, I guess, within people's perception of Tommy and everybody else?
Well, I've already said there is a great hypocrisy from that group of people. I've already said they're talking about freedom of speech for a certain group, for their little sect, their political sort of section of the marketplace, if you will, but they're not talking about free speech for us. And that is a great hypocrisy. And I said that earlier on the show. It's something I don't like. But just because they're hypocrites doesn't mean we have to be hypocrites. Just because Tommy Robinson doesn't want to speak about Monica Schaefer or Ursula Haverbeck or Alison Chablow doesn't mean I won't defend his right to free speech, because I like to hold myself to a higher standard than that. We are unique in the fact that we see the big picture. We are unique in the fact that we don't just see the problems as they manifest themselves on the street. We are unique in we see the causes of the problems, that we join up the dots. And people like Tommy Robinson, he doesn't go as far as we do. He just concerns himself with immediate issues, with immediate problems. He doesn't concern himself with solving those problems. He's almost like a canary in a mine shaft. He just warns people of the impending problems, but he doesn't do anything to solve those problems. But that doesn't mean we can't take something positive from what he's done. Now, the fact is, his arrest, his incarceration, has managed to mobilize huge numbers of people. Just last weekend, we saw 25,000 people on the streets of London protesting against his incarceration. We saw, for the first time in a long time, a mass of people literally trying to get onto Downing Street. We saw people angry. We saw people motivated. We saw people actually doing something. And we can take the negatives from what Tommy Robinson does, or we can try and take the positives. Now, I'm a positive person, and I see a huge number of fractures in the movement that we are in. I see a huge number of divisions. I see people bad-mouthing people. I see people trying to undermine other people. And all I try to do is search for the positives in what individuals do. And if people are doing something good, I would prefer to focus on that than try to pull them down or focus on the negatives, because we are so limited in number and we face such overwhelming odds already. It just makes things a lot better if we try to find common ground with those who are nominally on our side. And as I've already said, there are great hypocrisies, there are great frustrations with people like Tommy Robinson, but there are also great benefits from having him around. He has woke up many, many thousands of people. Many thousands of people have been motivated to activism because of him. And his incarceration has got many, many people talking about free speech. Now, it is our job as activists, it's our job as people who are woken up to the Zionist influence, to bigger issues, to the actual core of the problem, to try and get involved in those movements and to try and get those people who are already active into thinking about things they haven't previously thought about. It's our job to essentially co-opt that movement and use that energy and channel it into something much more productive, so it isn't just wasted on mindless anger in London, but it's directed to something more positive.
Agreed, 100%. Great statement, great comment. It's the Fetch, everybody. Mark Collett, back. Welcome back. It is The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Our guest joining us here in hour number two is Mark Collett. He is the author of The Fall of Western Man. He is a former BNP Party member, and also he's got a show called, I believe, Inside the Alt, This Week Inside the Alt-Right, or This Week in the Alt. I think it's Inside the Alt. He'll tell us. But Mark, welcome back.
Thank you. It's This Week on the Alt-Right.
Thank you. This Week on the Alt-Right. You know, the first, of course, I've been following you on Twitter for quite some time, at least your tweets. They would always appear inside of my timeline. And so I thought, wow, I like this guy. And then people are starting to send me emails. You got to get Mark Collett on your show. And then people sent me information about, what was that thing? A video you did regarding, what do you call this? Regarding a new law that's proposed that could put people in jail for something like 6 years for violating something on the telecommunications laws there. Tell us about that and how you found out about that.
Well, I've done a full podcast on that. I release a podcast every week. They're usually about 15 to 20 minutes long. Some are a little longer. I did a particularly long one that your viewers may well be interested in. It was about the Jewish role in the porn industry, actually. I think most of your listeners would really, really enjoy that one. And it's been one of my more popular ones. But there is going to be a new law in the UK, which essentially could land you with, let me just bring up the actual information on this. I believe it's 6 years in prison for making posts on social media. But the issue with this law that is more worrying than you would initially think, obviously, it's horrific to think that somebody could spend up to 6 years in jail for simply posting on social media. The law that has been proposed has been written in a very, very vague way indeed. And that's usually what happens with much of this, what they call hate laws, which are essentially anti-free speech laws. They're written in a very fuzzy, very fluffy, very open-ended way, which comes down to the interpretation of the particular judge in question. Now, I've actually got the documents in front of me here, so I can actually bring up the quotes verbatim from the documents to actually show people how incredibly sort of skewed these are and how insanely open-ended they are. And that's this will be the big problem. Now, let me just scroll to this. That's not the one. There's quite a long document. So
Of your efforts, by the way, Mark, I actually pulled it down and began to read it. I thought your video was excellent as far as exposing it. While you go digging for it, I'll just fill the time here. But yeah, I got this down. Guys, we'll try to put this on the website so anybody in the UK, and we know we've got a lot of listeners in the UK, you guys can go look at this. But literally, they're talking about 6 years on something called hate crime that is so nebulous that basically we could charge every Jew tomorrow and probably get them convicted if we controlled the courts. That's how dangerous this thing is. And Mark, you find your place there?
Yeah, I'm still just sort of flicking
through this.
You can paraphrase.
It's okay. It's mainly live radio, so you can paraphrase.
Yeah, the thing is with stuff like this, I want to get things. I like to get things absolutely spot on. I wish you'd mentioned this before. I'd have had a few windows open with different bits and pieces. But essentially, the terms they've used to sort of phrase this is that if you are saying something and they class you as an opinion former or someone with a large audience or a large following, or you are a person of interest,
yes,
they are very, very open-ended terms. Because when you're talking about, is somebody sort of a person of interest? Is somebody a public influencer? Well, what does that mean? And then they start saying, has the post been seen by many people? Well, what do you class as many people? What do you class as a lot of people? Well, online, your post might be seen by 2,000 people. Is that many people? Well, that's for a judge to decide. But it isn't something that is actually quantified in these documents. Now, in today's world, it really isn't anything strange for someone to have, let's say, what, 1,000, 2,000 friends on social media? Well, traditionally, speaking to 2,000 people, say at a public meeting, would be seen as many people. And if you are speaking to many people, that would be cause for 6 years in jail. I've just found the section. So you've got, it's basically split into two areas. It's split into what they call culpability and harm factors. And the first is high culpability. And it says the factors proposed were identified as factors increasing seriousness of offences in the limited number of cases for analysis. So that's worrying for a start, because they're only basing this on a limited number of cases. This law isn't being drawn up from a vast wealth of information. So for a start, it's already on rocky ground. Then it says...
Do you find that the Alison Chablot case, because to me this Alison Chablot case is something that's kind of walking into this more draconian law?
It is, and this is where it really comes in. It says, where inflammatory speeches were given by influential figures. Well, what is an influential figure? Then it says other cases involve publication on YouTube of content inciting serious violence towards particular racial or religious groups. So then it goes on to say, with activity continuing over a long period of time and intended to reach global audiences. So there you have three very, very worrying and open-ended terms. Firstly, influential figures. Well, what makes you an influential figure? Secondly, how long have you been doing it? So if you've been uploading content to YouTube for, say, a year, 2 years, and you are someone with, say, 10,000, 5, 10,000 subscribers, you could be classed as an influential figure who is doing this over a sustained period of time. And finally, it says, with intended to reach global audiences. Well, you've uploaded it to the internet. The internet is a global audience.
All of us, Mark, do it to reach a global audience. You don't ever put content and produce content for it to just reach your old high school down the street from 40 years ago.
This is the problem. As soon as you have been uploading material to YouTube, and you are speaking to, say, 1,000, 2,000 people, you could potentially be listed under the category of high culpability. And that puts you in the six-year category. Now, the other part is the harm factors. And it says these factors are intended to reflect the most serious harm which could be caused. And they say things such as involving... It starts with it threatens or endangers life. Now, that sounds very reasonable, because you're saying if activity is encouraged which threatens or endangers life, I think we can all agree that if people are calling for others to be murdered, that would be something that people would want to take action on.
For us, from a strategic point of view, is when you say causing or to cause people to harm others, we have to factor in that when we get labeled neo-Nazi, when we get labeled a Jew hater, when we get labeled all of this stuff coming from the Jewish community, there are people in the Jewish community very ready, willing, and able to act on that and cause harm to us physically.
Well, that's the most worrying part of that. As it goes on, it says, as well as cases involving widespread dissemination of material and or a strong likelihood that many would be influenced. Now, again, you're seeing there, what is many? What is many? So you're saying if you are going to be classified as high culpability, you are someone who is an influencer who uploads things over a period of time, and finally, you are somebody who wants to reach a global audience. And then high harm factors include simply material which was meant to influence a large number of people. Now, what worries me about all of that is those could essentially be used to jail anyone who has used Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter as a means of disseminating information. Because as soon as you have uploaded anything to the internet, you have reached a global audience. And from a traditional political perspective, we are all reaching many people. We are all public influencers. When I was in the BNP, if you had a meeting, a local meeting with 120 people at it or more, you would call that a success. Once you got into three figures, once you got people packed into the pub and there was standing room only, that would be an influential local meeting. Well, if you got 100 views on a YouTube video, that would be nothing compared to the audiences we're reaching. You know, I've had YouTube videos that have been seen over 250,000 times. So what category does that put me in? Well, that initially, well, instantly puts me in the six-year category.
And yes.
That is, and none of this is quantified. None of it's written in a modern way. There are no figures. And this is what they're going to be using against us. Now, obviously, you've seen the Alison Chablow case. Now, the reason I didn't want to comment on that initially is this is very, very different. Because the Alison Chablow case was something of a test bed. In the UK, Holocaust denial is not a crime, yet she has been found guilty of writing songs which the Jewish community claimed was Holocaust denial. But she hasn't been charged under any law about Holocaust denial because there isn't one. She's been charged for causing what they've said is criminal offence. So all of a sudden, they have brought in Holocaust denial laws through the back door. So now anyone who mentions anything about the Holocaust or calls any sort of fact into disrepute when it comes to the Holocaust could potentially face a criminal prosecution for causing criminal offence. Because as I mentioned earlier, British law constantly evolves and it constantly gets added to and moves forward. And this addition to British law, which will now be written into law, unless it's challenged, unless she successfully appeals it, will mean she's got very little chance of doing it.
I heard she's going to go appeal also this.
But she would have very little chance of winning that. Because the powers that have amassed to bring about her prosecution are very powerful. You've got to remember, initially, the Crown Prosecution Service said she hadn't committed a crime. Mm-hmm. It was the Jewish community who lobbied the Crown Prosecution Service and essentially brought about this prosecution through their financial power. That is how this whole case came about. And then you have to look and say, is law actually being made or is the law being bought and paid for?
Which is, yeah, that's our point. It is being bought and paid for. Real quickly, going back, and we've lost our video again feed, but that's fine. We're live radio mainly. We reach tens of thousands of people on the live radio mark, so that's the main thing. We're just kind of launching this video because you guys are so successful at it. We see you guys doing a great job out there, so we thought, let's just see what we can do. But nonetheless, your book, Fall of Western Man, talk to us about The Fall of Western Man.
Well, The Fall of Western Man is a little bit of a different work. We talked earlier about Tommy Robinson. We had a couple of callers who were sort of very frustrated about the fact he only talks about the problems. And I was sort of trying to say, these are problems that need discussing, though. You know, the grooming of tens and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, of British girls by Muslim men does need talking about. You know, people talk about the Holocaust. Well, this has been an unprecedented wave of sexual assault, sexual abuse, which is not only down to Muslim men. Let's get this straight. This is down to several other issues. One of those issues is the government being complicit, the police force being complicit because they covered this up. But another issue that people don't want to talk about, and this is really what my book is about the way that the white community, the way the British community, the way those of European descent have become atomized, have become separated, have become individualistic, have become hedonistic, have become materialistic, and no longer act with any sense of in-group preference. And The Fall of Western Man isn't so much a discussion of external problems such as immigration or Islamic grooming, but it's a discussion of how Western man has gone from being a cohesive, powerful, homogenous group that stuck together and was bound by tradition, culture, and a shared sense of morality, and how that group that once held the entire world in awe has been separated, has been shattered, has been split apart. And when I talk about the grooming scandal in my book, I say the biggest shock to people shouldn't be that the Muslim community did this, because Islamic communities have done similar things all over the world. It also shouldn't be a huge shock that multiculturalists in the government and the police force covered this up, because they are, of course, only acting in their own interests, and self-interested politicians and police chiefs are nothing new. But the truly shocking thing about the grooming scandal, when you analyze it and look at it through the microscope and take everything into account, is the fact that there was no coordinated actual action defense by the white community. The communities this was happening in did nothing. They hid behind their net curtains as their daughters were driven away into the night to be sexually assaulted and raped. And they did this because they were more scared, they feared being called a racist more than they feared their daughter being sexually assaulted. And the fall of Western man details how we as a people were once proud, cohesive, had this wonderful in-group preference, and how that shaped our history, it shaped our civilization, and how all of that is essentially something that sprung forth from our nuclear family, from our strong family bonds, from the loving mother, the strong disciplinarian in a father figure who acts as a role model to the young men, the masculine male, the motherly female, how all of that has been broken apart by an insidious group of people who have pushed all this filth upon the Western world with the aim of destroying the nuclear family, with the aim of shattering our communities, and with the aim of turning us into atomized individuals that only think of pleasure and money.
And then that, of course, then always gives rise eventually to some type of not protest, but counter movement against it, which one of those would be considered, I guess, the alt-right. And you've got your podcast that deals with some of these younger people that really do have to deal with this very kind of dark future if nothing is done. Tell us a little about, I guess, about your work with the alt-right and how you and your radio show and how they can reach out to hear what you're doing.
Well, we have a live show every Wednesday called This Week on the Alt-Right. I have my own podcast every Thursday. And I want to get young people out of their malaise. I want to get them out of their bedrooms. I want to get them off their Xboxes. I want to get them out into the real world. I want to make Europeans great again. I want young men to be masculine. I want young women to be feminine. But I realize we have a really hard struggle ahead of us. And I spend a huge amount of time sending personal correspondence to young people who write to me. Now, I'm not going to go through all the problems I hear on a weekly basis from these people. That'd be a bit unfair. People might think I was singling them out to be discussed. But if you read the kind of correspondence I get, you can see the damage that our enemies have done. Our enemies have turned our young men from little warriors into very mixed up and lost souls. People who don't go out, they don't train, they don't want to be fit, they don't want to meet a female, they struggle with social interactions. And I believe if we are to beat our enemies, if we are to see some incredible Western revival, we need to start with community. We need to have a way of reaching out to those who feel lost, who feel like they're out on a limb. They feel like just part of this atomized and destroyed community, but they want something more. And we need to form almost like centers of gravity that are going to pull these people in and help them be part of something productive, something good, something wholesome, a real community that they can be a part of. Now, I'm just one person, but by doing these shows, by reaching out to people, by having good audience interactions, we can build communities. And it was only the other day, a young guy from Leeds which is where I live, messaged me. And he said, you know, since listening to your show and being in the chat, I identified a few people who live in the local area, and we've started going out and training in the local parks, going for runs together, doing some weights, doing some body weight exercises. And these young lads are all getting together and training off the back of being in the audience of these YouTube shows. So that, to me, is a huge positive, because if we can get our people back together, focusing on things like fitness, healthy eating, self-education, we can turn a generation of lost young people into the warriors that the Western world needs to see that wonderful revival that we all so desperately want.
And Mark, we got about time for one more quick topic, and that would be, I guess, as you being affiliated and following a lot of what's going on in the alt-right, what groups, not that you recommend, I don't want you to go out that far on a limb, but what groups do you identify as really being successful at creating the types of environments that you just discussed?
Well, I think there are groups mainly actually on the continent. I have some differences with these groups, so they're not all my best friends.
I don't recommend them, but who do you kind of say is going in that direction that people can at least look into to get some idea?
Well, over in Sweden, there's the Nordic Resistance. Yes. They are very smart. They are very disciplined. They are very ordered. They always look wonderful. And that's something I like to see.
They've been on this show too, Mark, by the way.
They're great. They're a model for young people. And what I mean by that, there's one thing I don't like about those big Tommy Robinson demos. I don't like people turning up looking scruffy. I don't like people drinking cans of beer. But when I see the Nordic Resistance and I see them smartly dressed, looking in shape, looking well-groomed, they are people that youngsters can look up to and take inspiration from. And they are the kind of people we need, because we need to set an example. The West has been dragged down. The West has been turned from something magnificent into something that at best is mediocre. And if we want to raise the West back up, we have to have role models. We have to have people that stand out. And we have to be ourselves exemplars of what we stand for. We have to be shining lights in this sea of degeneracy. We're like the lighthouses leading our people to safety. And I strongly believe that groups like the Nordic Resistance, with their smart, uniformed manner, they're physically fit, they are able to defend themselves, but they don't go looking for trouble. All of those things are things that we should aspire to.
And do you see any positive developments from your angle inside of the UK and Europe in general, really the UK? I mean, are people starting to really become aware now? Do you see some type of critical mass starting to form, or are we still years off from really getting that?
Well, I think we've seen a couple of things in the UK which have been amazing. We saw Brexit, which was the biggest bloody nose the establishment has really ever had in the UK post-Second World War.
And real quick, I got a call coming in. Let's see if they want to talk. 213 area code. Hi, you're on the line with Mark Collett.
Yeah, I'd like to know where your hero David Duke was for 10 years after 911. Over on Stormfront.
Come on.
On Stormfront. Same.
It's okay, Mark. Sorry about that. He changed his number. Mark, thanks for joining us again. We're going out live in the U.S., U.K., Canada. The video is a new trial here, but we appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your thoughts.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again, everybody. That's Mark Collett, everybody, and we'll get Mark's information out to you shortly on the website. Again, he's got his website. I think it's followwesternman.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, www.thefallofwesternman.com. I'm also on Twitter and YouTube.
Very good. Thanks, Mark, for coming in. Welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. A little bit of technical issues there in the last hour with the video feed. We apologize for that, but we have to remember we are first and foremost a radio show, and so the video has to suffer a little bit But nonetheless, we are back live. You can catch us on YouTube. Again, the video stream has always been fine. It's just my camera. The battery died, folks. I'm just kind of klutzy. I was preparing for Mark, and I forgot. I need really one technical help person here to run the type of quality show I want to run here. But nonetheless, we want to thank everybody for showing up. Really want to thank Mark Collett for coming in. Great guest. Again, I know a lot of you have asked us to get Mark on, so we hope to have him on again. Again, so join us on the live stream at YouTube. So go to YouTube, just search for InsideTheEyeLive.com until I get this thing properly embedded into the website here on Inside the Eye Live. Join us in the chat room again. We haven't mentioned the chat room since we started doing this too much, but the chat room again is always there. InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. It's humming along as usual, guys. I haven't been paying attention to you, but you guys are like filling up the chat room, man. That's a great thing. So I see, what is this? Semi-Semite, Blackbird 9 of looks like Lily Valley, Equicenter, and Frontreal, to name a few. One Eye is, of course, up there also. He's always on the chat room. He likes to hang out in our chat room equally. So, folks, join us in the chat room. And the telephone lines are now going to be opened again. 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. You know, a story came out of the UK, the BBC, and it's Mel Gibson. That's who it was. And you know, we've got this issue right now of this hyper-aggressive Jewish population that seems to think that they control and dominate our world. Okay, we're willing to grant them that, but then we want them to take 100% of the responsibility for the failures. But they don't want to have that issue at hand. What they want to do is essentially criminalize any and all dissent against them. And that type of behavior, folks, is what led to some 60, 65 million Russians being killed off some 60, 70 years ago. That is what has led to the Holodomor. That is what has led to basically Jewish tyranny and thus Talmudic tyranny everywhere that they have put themselves. And a lot of us don't understand, but we have been at war with this energy for millennia. Two millennia, three millennia. There's been talk about Jewish people going all the way back to the Roman Empire and what whining, troublesome people they are. And as long as they're kept at a minority and kept on the fringes and just a bunch of nagging, whining people that they are, that's fine. But when they come to wind themselves into power and then impose themselves, then out of necessity, mankind has a duty and an obligation to fight back. You cannot allow yourself to be consistently or perpetually placed into this era of subjugation. I mean, we've been in that in Western society for quite some time. As Mark was saying, there's been no organized pushback against Jewish power. And this, of course, is a problem. And Mel Gibson, he was just talking recently about Hollywood. And he appeared on the BBC, and he was quite open about Hollywood directly. And one of the things he called Hollywood was a den of parasites. That's Mel Gibson. He also called them a group who feasted on the blood of kids. Folks, these are very large accusations coming from somebody that was on the inside of this very evil type of society known as Hollywood. And some quotes coming from Mel Gibson, he called Hollywood drenched in the blood of innocent children. He went on to also say that this is all appearing on what was called the Graham Norton Show on the BBC, by the way. This was actually back in March, but we never got any word about this. It never got out in the Jewish press. It seemed like it went out on the BBC, but it immediately got censored. It immediately got shuttered. And the only way we can say about this is that Jews are the enemy of Western man. We have to pin it down on some type of focusing point, what I call a dreidel point. And where is that dreidel point but the word? The word has to exist. We have to name the thing. Everything that is named keeps its essence. It keeps its, I don't know what you want to call it, but this metaphysical track of, let's call it a metaphysical traceability back to the Creator. And when we look at the word Jew as it's been crafted, we can reverse it and it creates the word wedge. And certainly they create a wedge within our cultures. Certainly they create a wedge inside of our societies, inside of our nations, inside of our communities, inside of even our small groups. If you've ever sat down and gone into a group and tried to talk and there is a Jewish person present there, the energy will be very stressful. There will often be an uncanny sense of tension in the air. And of course, tension and stress, these are all types of energy and emotion that drives wedges between people. People begin to wonder, what's wrong? What's wrong? Maybe you're angry with something on the outside and you bring the stress home and your spouse or your significant other thinks that maybe the problem was with them and they start to become self-conscious. But in reality, you're just dealing with a Jewish person that day. Now, utilizing Jewish legal logic, if we're going to start to extend their logic into reality, when I see and I know that, let's say in a certain Jewish realm, they believe in something called Amalek. And Amalek, of course, is this great evil. And all Jewish people are bound to destroy Amalek. And so what is not told whenever you are called an anti-Semite or whenever you are called a racist hater or whenever you are called a Jew hater and all these other very inflammatory words that are directed upon you or a people or a group, what is not said is that this is a promotion of hatred. This is a promotion of intolerance. This is a call, literally, upon the militant factions of the Jewish community to bring down harm upon that person so targeted. In this way, we can show that every time a Jew uses the word anti-Semite, he is guilty of perpetuating and fomenting the hate that he seeks to want to crush. He knows, folks, he's not stupid. And you shouldn't be stupid either. Jews know very well their religious and philosophical systems. They understand that those who are sworn and who are shown to hate Jews, they are members of Amalek, and therefore they should be destroyed. They understand this side of the political dynamic here. The point is for you not to understand. But the reality is that every single law used by Jews to impose tyranny upon the rest of us, they were put in place, meaning laws to protect us from this tyranny. They were put in place to fight against this very same spiritual energy that today presents itself as we see as in the word Jew. This is how it's presented today. Now, we've seen various things coming out. We've heard, like last week, President Trump's administration, they went out and they grabbed, I heard, another 1,000 or 2,600 pedophiles, people who harm children in America. We have heard Trump talk about how the Jewish media, not that he doesn't say it that way, but he has gone out and talked about how the mainstream media is an enemy of the American people. We have to factor in very clearly that Hollywood is an extension of the Jewish people. We have to factor in Dershowitz calling for Jews never, ever to apologize for using their power to create peace for them. Not for you, not for me, but for them. Factor all of this in. Start factoring in the comments coming out of Israel that says, we Jews, we are the superior beings of this planet. Start to factor in all of these permutations into your calculation. Because when you start to break it down, what you will find is that there is open warfare by the Jewish people against we of Western civilization. But Western civilization is not organized, is not fighting back as a single solitary unit. Every time that we see people being hauled into jail for some type of idea called a hate crime, the only reason they are being called in is because Jews want to, quote unquote, nip in the bud any type of, quote unquote, anti-Semitism before it ever has a chance to germinate and to grow. For Jews, they know what they did to Germany. They know what they're doing to Germany. They know what they're doing to France. They know especially what they are doing inside of the United Kingdom. They know they are enemies of the people of these nations. They understand better than you that it is in their interest to stifle any and all dissent, any and all debate regarding the underlying principles that are creating the current political dynamics. It's that simple. They must prevent you from reading, hearing, and speaking about what is truthfully happening here in the world today. Delamere Devereaux came out with the poem, One Basic Truth. And one basic truth can be used to build a foundation or a mountain of lies. And if we take out this one truth and we place it on top of the mountain of lies will begin to crumble under the weight of this one truth. This is a very powerful thing that we have in our hands. The ability to speak. Why is it that Jews want to silence speech? It's because once we pull out that one basic truth and we place it onto the mountain of lies that they have crafted on our behalf at their ever so kind benevolence. Yeah, yeah. Well, what happens then is that that mountain of lies is going to start to crumble because the truth reverberates. The truth reverberates and will continue to reverberate, and it will have an effect even on those who never had an interest or a desire or a will to even come to meet up face to face with the truth. That's the reality of what is happening here. This is a macro dynamic or a macro political play. Jews are seen to be abusing their power. This is the point that has to be raised. Look, Dershowitz says, don't ever apologize that we control the media. Yet the media is complicit in the cover-up of 9/11. The media is complicit in covering up massive amounts of crimes on behalf of the Jewish community. We should then consider the media an enemy of the American people. And if Jews want to suppress our ability to speak on technology that was created by we of the West, which is called Internet Protocol, a type of technology that allows for many types of applications like a Twitter to be used and to make money from, we folks are stakeholders in Twitter, whether you believe it or not. We are stakeholders in Google. We are stakeholders in Facebook, because none of these companies would ever exist had it not been for the U.S. taxpayer funding and paying for that technology that is now known as Internet Protocol. If you want to use our Internet Protocol, we should tell every single social media company that if you do not start to adhere to our laws immediately, then we will simply nationalize you, or we will tax you to death and the pension funds that are making money be damned. Be damned. It's really so simple. This is the Fetch, everybody, Inside the Eye, live, intelligent media for the politically aware right here on Revolution revolution.radio, actually revolution radio at revolution.radio. Again, you can catch us also now live streaming on YouTube, Inside the Eye Live. Again, I don't even know how to get the frickin' stream. That's how I'm not inept, but I don't know how to even get the stream name here. So, guys, just spread it around. We are going out there. If you'd like to give the show a call, 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. You know, going back to this idea of harming children, you know, there's been a cheers while I drink a little tea, folks. You know, there's been talk about Jewish ritual murder of Western European children that goes all the way back for well over a thousand years. And many of the pogroms that were done against Jewish people were done because of what Jews were doing to children. Now, folks, we're losing a million children a year. Something like that in America. May not be that much, 700,000, but it's an enormous amount of children. The United Kingdom, a much smaller nation, is losing between 220 to 360,000 children a year. Now, you're going to tell me that with the UK being one of the most watched nations on the planet, that they can't find out where all these children are going, then what are all those cameras out there for? Joining us from, I believe, Idaho, Stan Hess. Stan, hi, welcome back to Inside the Eye Live.
Hi, Fetch.
Nice show last week, Stan. I enjoyed it.
I thank God that there's a friend of mine who let me know about your show and then others on the network there. I wanted to throw something out about reality and how to get ourselves involved in a way that is fun, but is also educational and.
All right, shoot. Go.
Well, I'm just I've only had one cup of coffee, so I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. But here's I just want to throw this out for people. This is a good friend of mine who used to do comedy shtick down in the Palo Alto area. He used to dress up like Uncle Sam and make jokes about Uncle Sam as basically Israel's bitch and all that. But this is what this friend of mine who used to do this, we were talking about how to get a message across. And he said, this is a guy who he heard at a conference say something which stuck in his mind. If you are going to tell people the truth, you make them laugh. Otherwise, they will kill you.
Mm.
Okay. You know, I used to live in Berkeley. I lived in Berkeley for 4 years, and I lived in San Francisco for a year or two, but I was in the Bay Area, and I used to watch the San Francisco mime troupe, and they used to put on all these things about U.S. imperialism, but it was all goofy and clownish and everything else, and that kind of stuff works, but you need to get people together to brainstorm. You know, the Jews have this thing called pill pull, which is, and you see it like when they do inside analysis of productions, TV productions, film productions. There are all these Jews that sit around a table, and they're going back and forth, you know, throwing ideas out and ramping up an idea by cooperating together to come up with crazy ideas. Because to me, that's the way that we are going to be able to do things is, I mean, we have to have our serious side, but we have to have our playful side. I was at American Renaissance Conference, I guess it was about, I don't know, 15 years ago. And actually, it was Greg Johnson. I think it was Greg Johnson. Yeah, it was Greg Johnson. And there was a bunch of us out in the lobby. I mean, we were actually pretty bored by the speeches. and so it was Greg Johnson and I and Tomislav Sunic from Croatia. And we were just kind of talking about things. And anyway, Greg Johnson was talking, and he was very animated. And I liked his spirit. And I said, and I asked him, I said, where do you get your information? Because I'm always depressed. He says, Saturday Night Live. So I know that Henrik had interviewed, I think it was Henrik that interviewed some guys from Tales of the Trough. And in other words, a production company, you know, a beginning production company. I don't think I know that's what we have to do. Theater is play. Theater is a way for us. It's therapy as well. And I don't know, I mean, I'm dating myself, but the most incredible, and this isn't humor, but this is passion. And I think that's one of the things that we don't have is real deep passion, is Death of a Salesman. That was my favorite play because it was really theatrical and it talked about the failure of basically somebody who's out of balance and all they want to do is to be a big shot. It's that big shotism. But anyway, I'm just doing free association right now. Forgive me. There was a Jewish guy who, of course, wrote under a pen name, but he wrote this play called Waiting for Lefty. And I happened to see that production at the YMCA in San Francisco with some Trotskyist friends, ex-Trotskyist friends. And it was really cool, and it was emotive, and there was interplay between the audience and the guys that were up on the stage. And I thought to myself, what about a play, you know, it doesn't have to be that long, Waiting for Whitey. And so, again, this digging in, we have to dig into the culture in the sense that we have to create a product that is funny. I can tell you that the thing that really got my spirit up was, anti-racist Adolf and how whites discovered America. For those of you who haven't been over there to the White Rabbit radio show, this is the kind of stuff, animation, funny characters, and this is how we're going to begin to grab our people, is we have to have something which ridicules the establishment, makes fun of the media, just like what you mentioned, Fetch, is that Trump has already given us a lead by referring to the media as fake, they lie, and all this other kind of stuff. We've got enough people that if we can get together and start saying, okay, let's do a 5-minute skit on somebody who's Trump, and then somebody and people that are in the audience that portray the reporter.
Your anyway, time's up. Your time's up there. Up. Yeah, we got a break. That's Stan, everybody. He's got the new show, Removing the Goalposts, right on the right stuff. Thanks again, Stan, for calling in. And back to the last half hour right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, right here on Revolution Radio at revolution.radio. Again, if you'd like to, not if you'd like, you should. Just get out there and support Revolution Radio. Things are just clicking here. There we go. That looks like it worked right. Anyways, you can join us again in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. Also, we are now streaming live on YouTube. And we've got a few bugs still to work out, but we are going to certainly work those bugs out and try to get those solved. It's a software issue, though, I'm pretty sure. But nonetheless, we're working on that, everybody. So thanks again for coming. Check out the YouTube feed. I see that most of you have stayed throughout most of the show. So we definitely appreciate you staying for so long. I just want to announce here that there's been a huge library. If you want to be, you know, for those of you who are sponsoring, would like to sponsor Inside the Eye Live, I'm like trying to read at the same time. And my eyes are bad, guys. I got one eye, and that's this eye. This eye can't really see. So I'm doing the best I can here to read on so far away. But there's been a huge number of audiobooks that have been added to the archives. And they have been added to, it looks like it says here, dedicated rooms into the chat room this week on revolution.radio. So, again, you might want to go look into that. Again, well, you know what you should do, Nighthawk? Send me some information, and I'll run it on my website equally so we can at least try to get the word out a little bit clearer for me to talk on the fly here. It's kind of a bit hard. Let's see. Yeah, there we go. Let's see. You know, one of the things we want to talk about is just to close out the show, and it's kind of a nasty little thing, but it has to do with with Hollywood. And Hollywood is a place that is not a very nice place. Mel Gibson, back in his interview a couple months ago on the Graham Norton show on the BBC, he quoted here, he said about Hollywood, he says, it's an open secret in Hollywood. These people have their own religious and spiritual teachings and their own social and moral frameworks. They have their sacred texts. They are sick, believe me, and they couldn't be more at odds with what America stands for. He went on to add, working on my own ideas outside of the Hollywood system, because of course he was blacklisted. He said here, they churn through a huge amount of kids every year. Their spiritual beliefs, if you can call them that, direct them to harvest the energy of kids. They feast on this stuff and they thrive on it. What do I mean? This isn't some kind of artistic abstraction. They harvest the blood of children. They eat their flesh. They believe this gives them life force. If the child was suffering in bodily and psyche before it died, they believe this gives them extra life force. There is a creative and loving force inside most of us that guides us through this life. These people don't have this. For them, it's the opposite. And why is this kind of important today? Because if you're like me, you've been seeing and witnessing a lot of comments about how ICE, the immigration service here in America, has been snatching children from the parents, or not necessarily from the parents, but from the adults who are accompanying these children. Already 1,500 of these children are purported to have disappeared. The truth of the matter is this has been going on probably back since the Clinton administration. Child Protective Services, they're probably part of this criminal's network that involves or is involved in the abduction of children for the express purpose of having them literally executed on behalf of what they call Satanists. I don't call them Satanists per se. I call them Jehovianism or Jehovanist. They believe in the Jewish God Jehovah. This is where the blood sacrifice really goes. This is where literally, and don't fool yourself, everybody. It's real. It does happen. It's not something that you probably want to be delving in, but I know as I, growing up as a child, there was a girl next door to me. She disappeared. Literally, she was just in high school, 14, 15 years old, and she disappeared. Literally just disappeared, vanished without a trace. So I've had it like next to my family. I've seen it. I've seen how distraught family members are when their children disappear like this. I know, I can sense it. I understand it. And it's really, its home is in the Jewish community. See, Trump has given us the idea. He's saying, look, the mainstream media is the enemy of the American people. He has told you on the other side of the spectrum, folks, look, this child pedophilia has got to stop and we're going to do something about it. There's a huge amount of metaphysical capital that goes into the abduction of children, that goes into the creation of pedophilia or pederasty, as it really should be called. Folks, these things are real. And where do we find this energy coming from? We find it from two key groups. The Jewish group on one side, lesbian, gay, transgender, queer, pedophilia group on the other. These are people, folks, that do not have any type of moral direction in their lives. These are people that really will sacrifice you simply to drive home a point that we are in power. The lessons we got today, this past week, from the campaign against anti-Semitism relative to Alison Chablot, what's going on with Monica Schaefer, the lesson we are being taught here is that we Jews can spite you and harm you for whatever reasons we want. It doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to be based on any rational reality. It's just that we have that power. Dershowitz is telling everybody in the Jewish community, do not apologize for the power that you have. And yet you want to sit on the sidelines and pretend that everything is okay. You want to sit on the sidelines and pretend like nothing's wrong. It takes multiple facets for good to triumph over this level of evil, folks. We need, literally we need on a very high level, people in government able, willing, and capable to do something against this energy. I believe this is probably happening. People are not just going to sit down and do nothing. The thousands upon thousands of net people, which represents who knows how many hundreds or dozens of networks of pedophilia, these things appear to be very real. The reality is, though, is that Hollywood is probably at the very core of this problem. There's this idea that when you call on demons, whatever you want to call them, these entities will grant you what you wish, but they need something in return. I've met people who practice this art. I myself, as a young occult student back in the 1980s, understood how it works. And there are positive demons and negative demons, of course. But in the case of what we see happening in Hollywood, this is one of the most evil energies, perhaps, that we have to deal with here on planet Earth. This is their home. This is its home. This is where a group of people are dedicated to creating deceptions and lies that are not meant just to entertain, but are meant to control you, to dominate your mind, to force you into believing something that really never happened. All for what? To make money? To have power? Folks, there are people I have met working in Los Angeles, and it's been so many years. They didn't care what they did to you, so long as they made money. They didn't care. It was all about how much money can we make. And if you non-Jewish goy cattle, as they used to, they wouldn't quite go that far with me. But they understood I knew. But if you were not willing to stand up for your own rights, well then their attitude is they have every right to take everything from you. This is not a win-win situation where we're all going to grow together. This is a you are going to lose and they're going to win situation. It's zero sum. So the idea that somehow we can negotiate with Jews on these issues, it's kind of, you know, you can have high ideals and you can be idealistic and all that, but you're not understanding the reality of the situation. You're not understanding how the culture works, how it's fabricated, how it's structured. You know, Mel Gibson, he lived within it. He said here, Hollywood is drenched in the blood of innocent children. For a long time, all the references to pedophilia and cannibalism were symbolic or elusive. But I was personally introduced to the practice in the early 2000s. I can talk about this now because these people, the execs, they're dead now. The blood of a sexually abused infant is considered highly enriched and is highly prized. The money changing hands, the favors, the kickbacks, you have no idea. Babies are a high functioning currency all of their own. Babies are their premium brand of high-grade caviar, cocaine, diamond, steak. Folks, you're dealing with an evil that you can't really fathom. And it's something that we haven't really raised that much because from time to time, not from time to time, we're generally a family show. But from time to time, we have to bring into reality what's going on. As we see this energy seek to reach, it often overreaches. And it's currently in a state of overreaching right now. And when it overreaches, people begin to rebel. We are reaching that stage now. We're not there yet, but we're reaching that stage. They have made names, and they have their lists. They ban us all the time based on that list. I have seen lists of, quote unquote, hundreds upon hundreds of Nazis to be removed from Twitter because some Jew said so. Basically, all these voices silenced because a Jew said so. Now, it may sound crass to put it that way, but that's the reality of what's happening here. Some Jew said this, and so therefore, that person has to shut his mouth and be quiet. Because some Jew said something, Alison Chablow is supposed to stay off social media and not have a voice for a whole 12 months. And she was the victim of Jewish crime. She was the victim of cyber stalking. She was the victim of harassment. She was the victim of being physically harmed and emotionally harmed and financially harmed from Jewish interests. And they want everybody to just stay silent, as if somehow that's what a good person does. No, a good person speaks up and out against injustice. A solid, rounded, moral person does not allow this evil to perpetuate without any type of defense or assault or attack against it. And we have reached that stage now where we are getting to imperial overreach, chutzpah overreach, if you like. And we're going to see more and more laws come down the pike asking for anti-Semitism to be defined, anti-Semitism to be ruled, to be against the law. And folks, it was against the law in the Soviet Union, a country run by Jews, and guess what? It was the death penalty in Russia if you were accused of being an anti-Semite. Do you really think that a system that has evolved from basically literally eating children, and I forget the act, but he was on television. I think it was Jimmy Kimmel, but it may not be him, so I can't say for sure. But he came on the air and he said, I love the taste of baby paste, baby fat in the morning. Folks, that probably wasn't even just an accent. He just probably put it out there. Yeah, I love it. I like it. How do you allow this type of evil to survive within your midst? And then understand something here too, because you're playing a metaphysical battle. This energy operates through people. It does not operate on its own. It can only operate through people as a general rule. So if you start to take out the networks of these people, you can lessen the metaphysical projection of this energy on your planet. Consequently, when I hear things of 1,500, 600, 400, 2,000 pedophilia guys were taken out, folks, if they are shown to have really been involved in that, this should be a no holds bar, no mercies. Execute them because they are working on a level of evil that you cannot comprehend. And I'm not even for, quote unquote, the death penalty. I don't believe in capital punishment per se, because I know it's often abused and misused. But if you have firm knowledge and understanding that some television executive is dealing in children for the express purpose of calling upon these dark powers and these dark forces so that they can continue to spread their type of evil upon you, your family, and our country at large, these people should be dealt with. The law should be fast and the law should be firm. The law should not tolerate this. The law should understand that it too is going to take some casualties. We are at war. There are always casualties. I myself, I can tell you how dark and deep it gets. I've been involved. I've seen how it works. I've been targeted, etc., and all this is just old news now. But I understand it now. These people are sick. They're pathetic. They're psychopaths. I look at now the Jewish community bragging day in and day out about how much power they have. But what gets me about the Jewish community is that they don't want to recognize that the reason why what they call anti-Semitism exists is because we're tired. We are tired of them ruling over us, and they're not even from our culture. They're not even from us. They're from a whole different world. And when they talk to you about how they're chosen, they don't just believe that. They perhaps understand how it's so. And they understand that in order to serve their God, they must destroy planet Earth. The Sackler family, it's a big Jewish family in America. They have been personally named now in lawsuits for their role in the opioid crisis. Their formula was very simple. Sell more opioids, you make more money. That's a typical Jewish attitude. They don't care about the harm that comes its way. Well, guess what? We lose more Americans from the opioid crisis, some 40,000 plus, than we lost in all of Vietnam. And that was a pretty deadly war that lasted over 10 years. So the Sackler family, this nice, wonderful Jewish family, they decided that they're going to destroy 40,000 families just so they can make a dollar, just so they can send some shekels home to their buddies in Israel. Imagine now how many Jewish family doctors are out there, and they unthinkingly prescribe injection after injection of vaccines into your children. We now in America have the highest death rate of children one day or younger in the developing world. We have autism rates that are just skyrocketed. And this is from an era where we never saw this growing up when I was a young kid. It never happened. Yet it's everywhere. And Jews want to sit there and gaslight me and say, has nothing to do with the vaccines. Well, are they really crazy? I think so, but I see them as evilly crazy. 808 Free and Awake. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Unapologetic Jewish greetings, Fetch.
Thank you, man. How you been?
Well, apparently there may be a connection between David Horowitz and Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General, that issued that report today that was critical of Comey.
Okay.
The FBI investigation.
I'm not getting much itself over here in Jordan. I'd really have to work hard to research it. So, yeah, let us know what's happening.
Yeah, we can get more in depth next week, but I just wanted to make you aware of that fact that there may be a connection. Maybe they're related. And given David Horowitz's attitude, I wonder how far this investigation is going to go if they share the same beliefs.
Fill me in. Who's David Horowitz? I'm not even aware of the personality.
The person that you introduced that made that statement about Jews being unapologetic.
Oh, that Horowitz.
Alan. Dershowitz. Oh, sorry.
Dershowitz. Not Horowitz. Come on.
No, man. I got it all wrong.
Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah, okay. Well, there may be a connection still.
But small issue, right?
Well, anyway, yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I thought that was a connection there, but I guess not. At least not directly.
Yeah, what's happening with this? I mean, to me, well, I'm not sure. To me, it looks like the left, the mosque is going crazy in the background. You might be able to hear it. I'm trying to keep it dampened. But, you know, the left side of Jewish community, the artists, the people that are from Hollywood, the musical scene, they're clearly involved at many layers, or at least some layers, of this highly demonic Jehovahian child sacrifice network.
Right.
That's my take on it. The Likudniks, I'm not so sure if they are as involved, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. They may not be, but they seem to be a different breed of Jews. So we're looking at like two different breeds
mentality
within this energy. It's hard to read right now, but I'm looking at it's like there may be some two distinct strains within there.
But with the same objectives in mind, for the most part, right? And that's Jewish domination and being unapologetic again for their power and control over the world.
Yes.
So there you are. Yeah. Well, I would like for you to continue your rant because you were going pretty good. I thought I had some valuable information, but I guess I'll have to try harder next time.
David Horowitz, Dershowitz, they all got the itzes in there. It's understandable.
Okay. Well, continue on. We can go into more depth next week if you like. About the IG
very
more.
Good, everybody. Yeah, I know we've only got a couple minutes to go. Thanks for calling in, 808.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks so much. And yeah, I just want to say thanks to everybody out there that's been listening on the stream, watching on the stream. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's again where it's a work in progress, but it's doing better, I know for sure. But we want to thank you for coming in, checking it out. And again, at the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Of course, click on the live chat button. That gets you there. And our numbers for next week, we don't have any guests lined up yet, but we'll probably have something for next week. 1-323-275-1314. And of course, Inside the Eye Live prime time every Thursday afternoon at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern to 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution.radio. That's Revolution.radio. And there's been, fresh off the victory that the campaign against anti-Semitism has had inside of the UK, they are now calling for an independent party, an independent investigation of Jeremy Corbyn as it's everywhere, guys. New anti-Semitism czar lashes out at the CAA. So essentially, we've got two sides. Here's my point, folks. Speak up. Don't be afraid. People are going to be casualties in this thing. That's part of the war, but you can prevail. And it's going to take everybody working together. It's about time that we start to push back against what has been a very dangerous imposition upon our freedom of assembly, our freedom of speech, our right to bear arms, our ability to maintain our nations in a manner that we see fit, not as Jews see fit for us. As far as I am concerned, folks, every single person involved in the massive immigration scam are guilty of treason and, quite frankly, should be dealt with accordingly. The number of deaths and crimes and harm to American families at the hands of these policies certainly warrants that those who are behind these policies face consequences equal and up to the harm that they have caused. And when you have massive amounts of immigrants coming into your country, raping and pillaging as they go along, well, certainly those who were responsible for the policy should be held accountable in an equal layer or level of, I don't know, that in mind. Again, thanks for joining us, everybody. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. See y'all Thursday for Inside the Eye Live prime time.